guest, Ben Barnes, great actor, great singer. The new album, the new EP is called Songs for You. It's coming out October 15th. The single is 11/11. Ben's in a million projects. Obviously, you know him from Narnia, Westworld, all the stuff I named at the top of the episode. We're talking all about his career, man. He's a great guy, and I think you guys are going to really enjoy this interview. Here he is, Ben Barnes. An actor who's been a part of several of my favorite projects over the last few years, season one of Westworld. So I just had Angela Serafian on the show recently. And I was like, I'll put season one of Westworld up against any television over the last 20 years. Like that ending, I was like, I'm in. And then I love The Punisher with you and Bernthal. I absolutely love that whole series. I watched it, like binged it like in 2 days, which tells you I have no life, Ben Barnes. So congrats. And you're a singer. Who knew?
Hey, it doesn't say you have no life to be binging TV. I do it guilt-free all of the time. It says I need to get through this because I have a life to get on with.
The real question is, do you binge your own projects and just sit there and criticize every aspect of yourself?
Yes. Shows that I love, I will eke out over the longest possible period. I'll tease them out. I'll be like, I'll save them for like when I feel like I deserve them, a new episode. Where, stuff that I'm in, I watch it once, I get through it short, fast, you know, just get through it so you've seen it, you're going to, you know, appreciate everyone else, send out a bunch of complimentary messages to everyone you worked with, and then forget it ever happened, but yeah, for sure.
You're like, oh man, my ass didn't look great in that shot of Westworld where I'm on the horse, I can't watch this anymore, I'm gone.
I cannot begin to tell you how uncomfortable that was.
Oh, I'm going to be asking. Get ready. Let me get your album out of the way.
Chafing isn't even the word. Chafing isn't even the word.
Oh, save this. I have so many questions. Congrats on the new EP, by the way. I always love when we get to see artists who get to explore different sides of themselves that they're not obviously known for. And obviously, when you start having success in this business, you get those opportunities. So how did the EP come about?
It's actually just entirely a labor of love. I think music was my first love when I was sort of 18, 19. It was just something I would do Sinatra tribute concerts and Stevie Wonder soul nights at school, and I would play drums and sing in jazz orchestras and I was just drawn to all that, you know, old soul, you know, fishing out the Ray Charles and the Donny Hathaway in the back of my dad's, you know, vinyl collections. And That's what I love. And I've always sort of kept it to myself. And I just reached a point in my life where I just felt ready, willing, and able to get it out there. I think, I was actually sort of looking at the, you know, Instagram, and I started sharing songs, covers of things at my piano as a sort of dip my toe in the water, see if people are going to mock me mercilessly or whether they'd be into it. And actually, you know, I was, you know, my sort of followers, the people that have supported me were celebrating it and you know, asking me to do it more and enjoying it. And it just bolstered me. And I just finally, you know, having spent a career pretending to be other people, and even when I was thinking about music in my teens, doing tribute concerts and trying to sound like someone else and playing musicians in movies where I'm trying to sound like someone else and do impressions, I've been carrying around this weight of, well, what do I sound like? What do I have to say? What is it that is intrinsic to me that needs to be released into the world and shared? And I was looking at that word, when you post something on Instagram, you click the word share. And I was like, I want to share. I want to give something that I've made of myself and put it out into the world. And so that's what I've done.
You also got your co-star and my lifelong crush, Evan Rachel Wood, to co-star with you in the video, which is really cool. I love Evan Rachel Wood, man. I interviewed her for the first time. I've interviewed her many times, but the first time was in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival. And legitimately, I said, you're like my longtime crush. And she handled it in such stride. She's like, oh, that's so kind. And she hugged it. I was like, I'm done. I'm good.
She is nothing if not the epitome of grace. Yes, I was sitting at home. I came up with the idea for the video about seeing this woman everywhere you turn, and about, you know, about how people just become all things to you. People can kind of consume you in that way. And I had watched Evan on the set of Westworld do the most extraordinary things. I mean, she can be tough, she can show pride, she can show pathos, she can show vulnerability, and she can do it in the same shot. I would watch a shot of her. We were filming this shot in this kind of sort of strange orgiastic brothel scene, and she would walk down the corridor with confidence and gusto and turn a corner and then immediately sort of break down into this vulnerable emotional place, and she would do it within the same take every time. And I was like, you know, talking about finding an actress that could be all things to all people, that, you know, it just made sense to ask her to do it. And I wanted to sort of sew the line between my music career. I didn't want to pretend to suddenly be someone else, you know. So I've actually got a co-star from Westworld in my first video, and you will see very soon the second video of the EP, because I wanted to make a couple, has a co-star from another show in it.
So I want to jump into Westworld, because as I mentioned, one of my all-time favorite shows, season one was some of the best prestige television of all time. And I'm a TV lover. And obviously we have The Sopranos and The Wire and Breaking Bad and the countless other brilliant shows. But that first season of Westworld was just perfectly designed. Nolan and Lisa and that whole team, the shit they thought of, I was like, what the fuck? Who comes up? What demented minds come up with this stuff? But it was amazing. When you're in that show and the phenomenon it became, and I was talking to Angela about this, people were on Reddits, and like idiots like me were sitting there trying to guess the plot, and I had group text messages going. How awesome was it to know what was going to happen, knowing idiots like me probably didn't know?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was one of the idiots who didn't know, because I would get sent, especially the second season, I would just get sent these pages. It's just, I have no fucking clue what was going on. Like, what? And they're like, eventually they sort of go, well, you're this artificial sort of, you're the gateway to the system, which has the memories of all the people who've been, and I was like, I'm what? And you're Siri, you're Siri. I was like, okay, got it. You know, Lisa and Jonah, literal marriage made in heaven, you know, with the way that they're both so prolific, you know, both directors, they're both writers, they're both so creative, both such empaths. You know, the way they craft the show and come up with twists and turns and all of that, and then explain it to the idiots like me. But I was just, my job was on that show was just to have as much fun as I possibly could while everyone else was trying to figure out the meaning of life. My job was to tilt my hat, scratch my balls and have the best time. I had to find as much trouble as I could. And I have never had more fun on a job because everyone else was so stressed and I was just so free. So I loved playing that character, and I would have played it for much longer had the story, made room for it.
When you realize that you're exiting a show, whether it's dying or the way you exited, I mean, there's always an exit. How do you kind of process that? How do you handle knowing that shit, I'm gone?
Well, we were signed up for one season, Jimmy Simpson and I, who played William, we were signed up for one season. So we thought we were gone. And then, so it was such an honor, really. It felt, I can't really find any other word. It was, to be called up by Lisa and Jonah and say, hey, we want to bring you back to do this thing, and to kind of peel away the layers of the onion of this character a bit. He'd come across as such a douchebag in the first season, and then to be given the opportunity to scratch away at the surface and show why he's become this way. People don't just act like that because they're born that way. You know, douchebags are made. You know, then that's nurtured. And then to show a little bit of the relationship with his father and a little bit of his vulnerability, and then, you know, to be challenged like that. And you know, I think whenever people give you the opportunity to do more and show more, they have a certain faith in you that you can pull that off. And that always feels really good.
So obviously we had referenced before the horse scene. At this point, it's not even a spoiler because it was like
my first exit. Yeah.
So the horse scene, you read that on the script and they're like, Ben, we're going to put you naked on a horse, tied up, and Jimmy's going to slap the horse and you have to ride it. What's your reaction? And then what
I went straight to Lisa Joy and I said, you've done this to me. Why have you done this to me? Why would you strap me literally butt naked to a horse and slap its ass? Why would you want to do that? And she went, don't look at me. This was Jonah's idea. And of course, Jonah says the same thing about Lisa. But our two creators, showrunners, who are married.
Was it as bad as it looked? I mean, I can't imagine that's a friendly experience.
No, it's not a friendly experience. There's a reason people wear jodhpurs on horses. There's more than one reason, actually. Especially when you're doing the third take and they give you this, I think the polite word for it is a modesty pouch, but call it a sausage bag, whatever you want to call it. There is a system in place to preserve your modesty, but it's stuck on with double-sided tape. And on the third take, when the horse gallops off and you just see this pouch flapping in the wind past your head, and then some poor assistant director or horse wrangler has to sort of offer you back up your modesty pouch back up on the horse. It was a very real feeling moment. And I had bruises on the all sorts of places for a good few weeks after that.
You're scene. Like, but I didn't know bruises in these places could even exist.
Totally, exactly that. But you know what? Doing anything where people then talk about it afterwards, it feels is always worthwhile. You're always doing things on shows. You know, I've been punched in the face by John Bernthal. Like, he didn't mean to, but I have been. You know, you got to suffer for your art a little bit.
So it's so funny because, and you're obviously referencing The Punisher, which was awesome, and Bernthal was fucking awesome as The Punisher. No one plays a tough guy better than John Bernthal, and he's obviously going to be.
He's got the face, he's got the voice, and the truth is, he is a leader of men and a thoroughly charming man. But he's a tough boy, and that comes out. People like me, who are kind of soft, giant-hearted, wannabe soul singers. We gotta reach down deep and pull that tough up. When I know I was doing The Punisher, I was like, right, well, how am I gonna get people to take me seriously as a competitor and a sort of adversary for someone like Bernthal? So you gotta find your own way. But I truly believe that all men are all things and all people are all things. We have the capacity to be everything in our own way. And I think that's what's important about the music, but that's what's important about the characters I play is that anyone who is soft and vulnerable has power and toughness to them.
It's so funny because listening to you, you've got the perfect English accent. You seem like just a laid back, nice guy. On The Punisher, you're an absolute animal. You're a fucking ninja. You're obviously trying to kill John Bernthal the whole series. And you know, it's so funny to see the transition. How much fun do you have with something like that when you actually do get to be the asshole tough guy?
Well, I love it. I do. I have a draw towards stories of hope and I think when you're on the side of a character, even if it's a morally gray character like The Punisher, you're kind of willing him through, and which means you have to sort of. You have to have an antagonist. You have to have someone who you're rooting against. And so even if that's my role in it, I'm kind of drawn to those kind of stories, but it's also kind of, it's also kind of thrilling that people believe and would take you seriously as these things that you don't necessarily wear as a badge on the outside, but that you have at your core. We've all got a wild streak. We've all got a powerful, crazy street. We've all got, given the right circumstances, we can all be those things. And so it's just a question of like access, and you do, look, I'm walking around New York with my shaved head and, I'd obviously been like working out like crazy to do that job, and you feel different. You feel like a different kind of man when you're doing things like that. And so when you do get onto set, you access it more readily because you don't want to be digging way down deep every single morning. You want to start to feel like a guy who is a little bit invincible. You start to feel, the more you do that training and the fight training stuff, the more you feel like you are capable of it, even though you're not. you know, you start to feel like you are. And that's the whole point about, you know, playing character, that is you have to feel like you are.
So you have, like, from one guy to another, you have like the most gorgeous hair. I'm like, I'm 43, you're my age. I'm like, man, I want hair like that again. Did they make you shave your head when you actually had to shave it? Or was it
longer than this? It was longer than this when I shaved it for the second season, but I wanted to. I really wanted to, because I wanted to be free from any thought. You know, I thought in the first season, he's this kind of, there's an element of narcissism to this guy. There's an element of, you know, he wants to be perfect and come across as in control of everything, including his tie, the way his tie is knotted and the way his hair is, you know, in every scene. And I think that in the second season, you know, he gets the scarred face, but we talked about those scars being more psychological and on the inside. And I thought, I need to be free from how I worry about how I come across. So we need to shave my head. And I did it. I had hair longer than this, like down to my nose. We shaved it in like 2 minutes. And then Bernthal walks in the room. He goes, oh, bro, I thought you were going to like shave it. I thought it was going to be bald. And I was like, are you joking? Like, this is plenty scary enough.
Dude, you're so much better than I am. Like, I've been growing my hair for 2 years and I'm like, people are like, gutted. I have a mullet right now. I fucking love it. Like, people just either have a bad opinion or a good opinion. But like, if someone had to shave my head right now, I think I'd legitimately break down crying. I would just
let me tell you something. Let me break down something for you. It doesn't matter what other people think.
Some of us are more insecure than others, Ben.
No, you own it. You own it, my friend. If you love it, that's all that matters.
We were joking when you came on, because I don't know if people will be able to see it in the final video, but your sign on has two dashes on each side of the name. And you were like, oh, I did this because when I was on Shadow and Bones, we had thousands of people. And I love that. I didn't realize Shadow and Bones was that big a deal. I mean, I knew they had a built-in fan base, but it was like that wild a fan base.
The show did unbelievably well. We're unbelievably proud of it. You know, I knew there was kind of like a little fervor and excitement about it as it sort of got towards release, the fans of the books. But I think it found a much broader audience than that on Netflix. I'm just excited to be a part of something that people really engaged with and really connected to. Yeah.
When do you, like, so if people see you, what are they recognizing you for? Is it Punisher? Is it Westworld?
You know what? It's a different thing every day. I'm up in Toronto at the moment shooting this new Guillermo del Toro horror anthology series, The Cabinet of Curiosities, it's called. And every day I sort of come out the hotel and there's somebody waiting for me. And, you know, one day it'll be, I loved you in Narnia since I was 10, or, you know, guys who kind of like, I love The Punisher, or, you know, I'm a big kind of Westworld fan, you know, like very much like yourself. Like, people have, I think, different shows have, you know, call to different desires and different needs, you know, whether that's the fantasy, you know, escape, whether the escapism of fantasy or the kind of challenge of something like Westworld, the cerebral challenge of that, or the kind of like just kind of pure kind of fire of something like Westworld. And then sometimes people throw curveballs and they've just connected to something smaller you've done. They're like, oh, I love the soulfulness of Jackie and Ryan, that, you know, is a music movie I did with Katherine Heigl, or, you know, I think Killing Bono is a really funny movie that, you know, not many people saw, but, you know, it was a sort of comedy I did sort of 15 years ago. So people, it's split, but it's usually Narnia, Shadow and Bone, Westworld, or The Punisher. Normally those four.
So when people start recognizing you, and I talk to everybody about this, but I'm always curious to hear people's different responses. Fame is such a fucked up thing. I mean, when people start knowing who you are, most people who get in this business don't necessarily get into it to be famous. A lot of people are really driven by the beauty and the mastering of the craft. But when you start getting recognized, what's your like reaction at in the beginning when you're like, shit, you're talking to me?
I remember actually the first time I was in New York for the Caspian premiere, and it hadn't even come out yet. And there's people asking for my autograph in Starbucks or somewhere. I remember thinking it was just utterly surreal, and I always quite enjoyed it. But then, you know, I've worked with obviously people who are much more, you know, been you're sort of people who are like really famous,
Like Anthony Hopkins, for instance.
Well, yeah, I mean, he very much keeps himself to himself, obviously. I don't think he gives people many opportunities to kind of, you know, hound him on the street. But, you know, I can see what it can do when those people kind of turn on you, or those people kind of like follow you everywhere you go. For me, it's always been something I've kind of celebrated, is people kind of coming up and just wanting to, you know, particularly when, even when people don't want necessarily a picture or an autograph, they just want to tell you that they saw you in something and really enjoyed it. And I'm very lucky in that most of my interactions are with people who just want to say hello and just want to like know that they've met you. And the thing is, I can relate, because whenever I see someone from a show that I love, and I happen to get more opportunities than this at, you know, award shows or wherever I might be, or, you know, events that I would see actors or come across people, or even work with in many cases. You know, I got to work with Robin Williams, like, you know, I got to meet so many of my idols. I worked with Jeff Bridges and Colin Firth and all these incredible who's incredible people. If you think for one second that I wasn't like, maybe I could get a picture, and I'm like, a picture? You're going to do a whole film with them. What are you worrying about a picture for? But I feel the same way. If you see someone from something that you've connected to in whatever way, and I want to make that experience, like, you know, that experience is buoying for me, makes me feel like I'm doing something right. You know, obviously recently, you know, in Toronto shooting now, people coming up going, oh, I can't wait for the music on Friday or whatever it is. It's something new. People are following you, celebrating you. And that's, you know, I've never been afraid of that.
Robin Williams. I mean, comedians are tricky, because I've been doing this for over a decade. And I always say comedians, when you talk to them, can go one or the other way. One way is they're the same character that you see on stage and screen in real life. And the other way is they're completely introverted. They're dark. They are like, I'm as far away from this character that I have to give to the world as possible. Robin, every time I spoke to him, was the same way. He was electric every time you spoke to him. What was it like working with him? Was he the same way?
But here's the thing. Like I just said a few minutes ago, everyone is everything. And if they're electric on stage, it's because that's in them somewhere. And if there's a sort of a bit of an off switch when they come off and they stop performing, that's because that's in there somewhere. And all of us have all of those things. And all of us have our quiet moments, and all of us have our more electric feeling it moments, confident moments, you know, questioning moments. We've all got that. And I think, you know, working with him was extraordinary. And I experienced it that when there was, you know, people around him, he would feed off that energy and he would just like a light bulb or like the sun, actually, was probably more accurate. He just emanated, you know, emanated goodness and joy and all of that. And then when you would find yourself by yourself with him, just sitting quietly talking about, I think, you know, we were talking about the London riots were happening at the time when we were shooting together, and he was just interested in it and just quiet. And it was, that felt like a real privilege to have that, those few moments with him.
Do you just sit there and like say to yourself, holy shit, I'm having a human conversation about real shit with Robin fucking Williams?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. And then a few days later, you're shooting a scene with you and Robert De Niro, and you think, I have had dreams like this, and now I'm actually doing it. Remember to be here. And I think that's, you know, I try to tell myself that through everything. Like, and I try and do that actually when people come up to me. I try and make sure that they can be in that moment with me, because it's all we've got is this moment now, you know, as proven by, you know, the experiences of these people, particularly Robin. Like, we're only here now. So make the most of it.
I agree. Before I let you go, Ben, one of the main reasons I started this show was to talk to successful people about the habits and mentality that help make them successful. My question to you is, what are the habits you incorporate in your life to continue to elevate?
I mean, I think just doing this work as an actor has taught me the importance of like commitment and commitment to the moment that you're in. I think, you know, when you're an actor, you haven't necessarily written the words you're going to say. You haven't necessarily, you know, made the costume you're going to wear. You know, you're not going to edit it, but you are responsible for committing to this moment and making it honest. And I think that, you know, trying to carry that through to all parts of your life, whether that's writing a song or interacting with a friend or telling someone you love them, like being committed to that moment, to the moment that you're in. And I think that that's, I think that that's the key to everything. For me, live deeply, think about when I make decisions, I think about myself as an old man and wonder what that a man would have wanted me to do in that situation. And, you know, how do I want to be somebody who people think of as giant hearted and empathetic and someone who really sees them. And I think that informs how I do things, including how I approach stories and scripts and songwriting and all of it.
Dude, you're awesome. The new EP is called Songs For You. The new single is 11-11 featuring the love of my life, Evan Rachel Wood. Congratulations, Ben. Thank you so much for a fabulous interview.
Can't wait to see this
new project you're working on, but a big fan of everything else you've worked on. So congratulations.
Thanks. Nice to meet you, man.
Same here, man. Enjoy Toronto.
Bye.
Hey, take care, brother.